Unibet. Episode 72. Tom Rowe, Head Coach, Nürnberg Ice Tigers.
What this group is so wonderful about is they want to learn and they want to see the mistakes. And it's out the delivery too from the coach. I mean, if you're standing in the video room screaming and yelling at guys for making a mistake, that's one thing, but we call it constructive criticism. And I always tell the guys, I'm not here to embarrass anybody on the video. So I said, if you're on the video screen, you know, don't take it personal, because everybody in this room has done this mistake one time or another. I said, it's just, we need to get better. And the only way to do that is video.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht?
Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Ever since Unibet Hockey O'Clock relaunched, it was obvious that this person needs to be back. Now that the last episode was with the keeper of the cup, Phil Pritchard, I do think there's no better guest to follow up on this than the guy who's now on the Unibet Hockey O'Clock line. He's none other than Tom Rowe, probably now the dearest friend of the Unibet Hockey O'Clock podcast. And coach, as always, thankful, grateful that we're taking, that you're taking the time, especially during a hopefully deep upcoming playoff run with the Nürnberg Ice Tigers.
Thanks, Martin. It's as usual, always great getting together with you and talking hockey. And because, like I've said, you probably asked the most intelligent questions I've had any media person ask me. So great to be back with you.
Hopefully, the next 40 or so minutes talking to you will prove that. But as those 40 minutes go, this is going to be a special episode and a different episode on Unibet Hockey O'Clock, because this is going to be a two-part conversation intersected by Jessica Campbell, a coach, a power skating coach that you brought in. So all the people who want to listen to her first, they should just check out the show notes on the podcast. First part is going to be with you. Second part is going to be with Jessica. Third part is going to be with you. A lot of topics to tackle. But the most important question, how's Nürnberg treating you?
You know what? It's been unbelievable. I've had a lot of fun. Got a great group of players here. Very similar to the group that we had in Linz when I was there. And that's what's really made it special. And then the city itself, as you know, beautiful city, 500,000 people live here. So there's lots to do downtown, a lot of great restaurants, a lot of good sights to go see. So yeah, it couldn't be better. I always felt bad leaving Linz, because I figured, man, oh man, it's going to be tough to match that, because I had always hoped that I could finish my coaching career there. But when Nürnberg came along and I got a call from Stefan Ustorf, and after I spoke with him and talked with a few players who had played here before, they said, no, this is it's a great city. They, you know, they need help getting the team turned around again. So we're able to get in here, you know, get things a little more organized from a systems point of view. And literally since October 15th, it's been nothing but positive.
It's interesting that you mentioned the way how you got in. Like, rumors had it that you'd been in negotiations with a couple of clubs of the Ice Hockey League. And then it turned out to be Nürnberg. How did that recruiting process during summer time and early fall time go?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had talked to my wife and also my agent at the time, and just said that wasn't just going to jump at the first offer that came along. And then we wanted to be selective. You know, a couple of teams had shown some interest in the Austrian league, and again, bet at home ice hockey league. I have a tough time calling it that. But it just wasn't a right fit. You know, I felt, just to be totally transparent, I felt I deserved a certain amount of money to come coach, and based on the experiences that I have. So, you know, I had two or three teams kicking the tires. One basically told my agent what the offer would be around $50,000 and or 50,000 euros. And I just said, listen, I said, as much as I want to coach and get back into it, I just didn't think that was a fair salary. I do think that coaches are bad. I don't know if taking advantage is the right word, but there are so many guys out there that want to coach at the pro level. I think certain, and not all, but I think certain ownership groups, you know, typically want to try and get somebody as low as they possibly can. And I just wasn't going to do that. I just said, listen, I want to go to the right location and play for the right team or coach for the right team. But the financial piece has to be fair on both sides. So that's why I turned down. It was Bolzano. I never talked to anybody directly there. It was more done through my agent. And when he called me, it was a very short conversation. I just said, no, I said, I'm not going to go anywhere for that kind of money. And again, not that I'm greedy. I'm not doing this for the money, but I do think coaches deserve a certain amount of respect. And with that, you know, comes the financial piece.
And that is something that probably a lot of people won't understand, that there is an asking price and everybody has one. And if he or she accepts, all is good. And if not, it's not just that simple. That's obviously the business. But as regards to the recruiting process that we already talked about and probably the first conversation between you and Stefan Ustorf, the GM for the Nuremberg Ice Tigers, how did that one go?
You know, my agent had talked to him, this goes back to the summertime. And, you know, my agent had said it's a great city, great organization. They've had a lot of success there over the years, especially when Rob Wilson was here coaching. But he said they've kind of gotten off track and they need somebody to come in and help rebuild the program. So I said, yeah, I definitely would love to talk to Stefan, because you know he had played in North America. I knew who he was. He knew who I was, and I thought, man, that could be a pretty good fit. So we had a couple of discussions. He kept waiting, wanted to wait. He wanted to give the coach who was here an opportunity to get it turned around. You know, and there was a big push here to really try and develop more German coaches, which I think is great. Actually, one of my assistants is from Rosenheim, Germany, and really terrific guy, doing a wonderful job. But, you know, it just didn't work out. So Stefan turned up the heat a little bit, probably in September. Him and I had two or three more conversations. And then I had been watching a lot of video on his team, so I had a real good feel for the type of team they were and what I thought we could do to change it. And so, you know, the conversations him and I had were, I think, real progressive, real positive, and obviously he liked what I had to say. So when he finally made the decision to make a coaching change, you know, it was just a matter of fact how quick I could get over here to get things going.
Now, the first couple of conversations obviously went through your agent, and then again, you knew Stefan Ustorf, and you knew probably a little bit about his CV. He played in the minors. In North America, he also scouted for the LA Kings. So he had like on ice experience and also off the ice experience. How fast, or not that you had to click fast with him, but how important was it for you, for him having this kind of background, understanding North American hockey just as well as German hockey?
Yeah, that's what really, for me, pushed it over the top, because he had a good grasp on everything back in North America, because obviously you got to bring imports over. He did a great job last summer signing three of our imports, three young imports, Gregor McLeod, who's our top center iceman, and Tyler Sheehy, who's just scored his 26th goal for us last night. And then Nick Welsh, who's a real mobile defenseman. And he got him at a good time in their careers, because they're all looking to turn pro over here. So that intrigued me, that he had a good handle on that market, plus being German and knowing how the German network works over here. I figured, well, this guy's got the experience on both sides of the player evaluation part of it. So that really intrigued me. And then I had heard an awful lot of positive things about Manuel Kofler, who was my assistant coach here, which was also important to me because, you know, I wanted to make sure I went somewhere where the assistant coach understood why I was coming in. I've been in situations where the assistant coaches have been passed over, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But when I talked to Kofi on the phone right before I flew over, you know, he was very positive. You know, he said he's really looking forward to working with me and learning from me, because obviously I have a lot more experience than he does. But I said, hey, Kofi, I said, I'm looking forward to working with you as well, because I said, I don't think I'm coming in with all the answers. I said, I'm going to want you involved. I'm going to want your opinion. And there won't be any decisions made without us talking about them. So I just had a real good feel just from a couple of the conversations that I had with Stefan and with Kofi, and I just felt it was a real good fit.
As always, I got a ton of questions. There's so much hockey to be talking to you about, not only about the Nuremberg Ice Tigers. Fans of this podcast and listeners of this podcast know you as one of the premier NHL insiders and experts. And I try to put the most interesting questions in your very valued time in this narrowed space. And obviously your assistant coach, Manuel Kofler, is going to be one of them. Another very interesting coaching persona that you just brought in for the Nuremberg Ice Tigers. But I want to stay with the recruiting. You coming in, you being hired, you talking to Manuel Kofler, but also the, I'd imagine, uncomfortable situation of having a roster that's been set up where you necessarily didn't have a lot of say in it. How did that one feel coming over and knowing this is a team that you didn't put together?
Yeah, that never bothers me. Actually, I kind of like that, because I like to get in here, form my own opinion on the players. And I had watched an awful lot of video. I'd watched Nuremberg I watched a lot of teams in the DEL, because I figured if I wasn't going to go back to Austria, this was the place I wanted to try and land. And so I had a real good feel for Nuremberg. I just felt they had a lot of good players from what I could see on video, but it just wasn't overly structured. And they were just kind of all over the place. And then when I started doing my research on the roster, I talked to Larry Mitchell in Ingolstadt about it. And he said, you know, they're not a top six team right now, but he said they should not be at the bottom of the league where they were. And I asked him, I said, well, where do you think they should be? And he said, anywhere from 8th to 10th. And I said, okay. I said, well, there's definitely room to grow. I mean, that's exactly where we finished, was 8th. But up until a week ago, we had a chance to finish in the top 6. Unfortunately, COVID kicked in there a couple of games, and we got whacked pretty hard with that. And we had one game in Augsburg. We only had 2 lines and 4 defensemen. So we lost ground during that period, but then we were able to catch up and get right back into the thick of it. And so we were pretty darn close and finishing 6th, which would have been great, because we would have automatically been in the quarterfinals. But, you know, we've made a lot of strides. And to answer your question in the beginning here, you know, not being intimately involved in putting this roster together, you know, that really didn't bother me at all. I just felt there was enough here to work with and get it organized and get them turned in the right direction.
Full disclosure right here, we tried to record this conversation 2 different times, but the good thing is we're now recording on a Monday, so we already know your playoff opponent. We know how the regular season turned out, so that's an advantage, and it's been a newsworthy couple of days for the Nuremberg organization. These are all topics that I want to get to, but the interesting thing that you mentioned, the structure wasn't right when you had a look at Nuremberg. They're obviously was a lot of room for improvement for the team under your predecessor. What kind of things were you looking at where you thought this could be done differently, this could be done better? Not to take anything away from your predecessor, mind you, but just having that neutral kind of view and thinking, well, we can grow here.
Yeah, I like the young kids they had here. They had a lot of young guys: Tim Fleischer, Lucas Rebarek, Dennis Lobach, Jules Kara. I mean, we've got a lot of really good ones. Jake Ustorf, Stefan's son. And I like that part of it because I really like developing and working with young kids. So that intrigued me. Watched their systems. I just felt defensively they were really light on pucks, a lot of bad habits. And I figured, okay, similar to what it was like when I went to Linz, and they were playing real slow, or they weren't playing a fast game whatsoever or a puck possession game. There was just really no organized way of attacking the offensive zone or getting out of their own end of the ice. So I figured, okay, we'll spend probably the majority of the time getting the defense squared away first. And that's what we worked on. And once we got that to an area of, or to a level of consistency, I figured the offense would take over and let them use their own skills. I didn't want to get too much structure in the offense. I just felt we got to spend an awful lot of time on the defensive part of the game and teach them how to be a lot more structured, and then also how to close plays down in certain areas of the ice on our end. So that's what I focused on, because I felt we had a big enough group of defensemen and we had enough skill. We had a good combination of skill and grit. And work ethic here has been, from literally day one, work ethic has never been an issue. They come to the rink every single day, work as hard as they possibly can. And so with that in mind, I figured, okay, you know what? This is not going to take as long to turn around as I think it is. And you know, thank goodness the guys bought into what we were telling them, and they were all excited about it. Plus, we really make it a fun atmosphere. You know, every day you come into our locker room, win or lose the day before, you know, you'd think we just won a championship. The guys are real tight. It's doesn't matter the imports of the German players. They all get along and everybody, you know, they go out together and have fun, have dinner. So the chemistry has been phenomenal, and the character is really what's gotten us through some of the tough times.
Again, there could be 100 of follow-up questions just about or with what you said. Obviously the team working a little too slow, obviously the team needing some structure. Just read an article about Martin Saint-Louis coming into the Canadiens and trying to force players playing on small ice to keep making good decisions, which is an interesting way of tackling a team that's in turmoil and probably doesn't know what to do. One of the interesting things just before you came in that was uttered by Stefan Ustorf that I found in a press release, he said the team needs to act smarter on the ice. Now, knowing that you're coming in, how do you ensure that they keep making smart decisions or smarter decisions?
Yeah, you just obviously a lot of video. We do a lot of video here all the time, and it's just showing them game situations. You know, for instance, at each blue line, you know, that's not the area of the ice that you want to be trying to dipsy doodle or toe drag guys. I mean, you want to, the term that we're using now, and actually Jessica Campbell, who you mentioned earlier, she's the one that came in and you know, put some of these offensive ideas in place. And we talk a lot of similarities, but she did a phenomenal job of making it a very easy way of understanding. And, you know, we weren't winning a lot of the lines, the blue line, the red line, and the offensive blue line. And we definitely weren't winning the offensive zone enough. So when she got here, we put some of that into place, and that has really helped our offensive game. And that's where the smart decisions come in, you know, outline to the guys or show the guys in the areas of the ice where they can make plays, you know, because we do not want to be a dump and chase team. We want to be a puck possession team. And to be a puck possession team, you got to be able to support the puck, and you got to have five guys connected going up and down the ice together. So that's where the smart decisions come in. So the guy that has the puck has an idea on where his line mates are to be able to pass the puck and make the wise decision that Stefan was talking about in the release that you read or the article that you read. And then that's just repetition. You know, it's just doing it over and over and over in practice and showing the guys on video. And that's what this group is so wonderful about, is they want to learn and they want to see the mistakes. And then it's out the delivery too from the coach. I mean, if you're standing in the video room screaming and yelling at guys for making a mistake, that's one thing, but we call it constructive criticism. And I always tell the guys, I'm not here to embarrass anybody on the video. So I said, if you're on the video screen, you know, don't take it personal, because everybody in this room has done this mistake one time or another. I said, it's just, we need to get better. And the only way to do that is video. So that's how you can teach the wiser decisions. And the guys have definitely improved their hockey sense, I guess, is the best way to put it, and when to make a play in certain areas of the ice and when not to, or when to protect it, or when to invite the pressure to you so you can release the puck to somebody who's open. So we're getting much, much better at that.
Now, if people have been listening to Unibet Hockey O'Clock before, and hopefully because of this podcast, there are a lot of new, potentially Nuremberg fans coming in, they know you, they know what you've gone through, they know how closely you paid attention to international leagues, but also the National Hockey League. And there has been kind of an involuntary sabbatical. You were looking for opportunities last year, obviously with COVID, a whole different situation than we're facing right now. And there were opportunities, just not the right time, the right place. But what you mentioned basically a little more than a year ago here on the podcast was that you're reading a lot, that you're trying to get better in certain areas, that you're trying to do some research. Now, from all the things that you've read, from all the things that you've seen that you wanted to apply to your coaching, what's the one thing, or maybe the first thing that you did apply to your new coaching gig?
Well, the very first thing and the biggest thing I've done is I've really made sure, and I started doing it in Linz, but I did it right from the get-go when I got to Nuremberg, was building relationships with the players and getting to know every single player real well, and making sure that they knew that, yeah, I'm here to push you, to get you out of your comfort zone. And there are going to be days that I'm going to be hard on you, but never once do I want anybody leaving the rink that we don't like them as people or we don't like them as hockey players. It's just our job to get them out of their comfort zone. But I've kept things very positive here. I've really encouraged the guys to make plays, but you can't make plays on the ice until they know that the coach cares about them and trust them as players. So I've spent every single day making sure that I talk to every single player. There's not a player in our locker room that doesn't have a conversation with us, you know, with myself and with Manuel Koeffler before they go home. So the communication has been a huge part of the success of the team. And I think you can get on players when you need to. You can't do it every day, but when the moment calls for it, you can do it, and you're not going to lose them. If I was just constantly on them 24 hours a day, not giving them any positive feedback, and they're just hearing all the negative, then you're never going to become a real good team. So that would be the biggest thing I've done, is just making sure that this is a good atmosphere, really a safe atmosphere. I want the guys to come in here and be able to relax and enjoy coming to the rink every single day. And that's what I think we've provided as a group, is we provide a good, safe environment for the players to be in, plus the staff. I mean, I've got a phenomenal equipment staff, medical staff. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like I said earlier, if you walk into our locker room, you know, you would see 25, 30 guys all getting along, laughing, joking around with each other, and a very, very comfortable atmosphere. And I think that is the biggest thing I've taken out of all the books that I've read about leadership and chemistry and how you go about having a successful business, no matter what industry that you're in.
Also being a successful businessman, a successful leader of men and women is trying to bring in good people, good other coaches. And you just did that a week ago. I talked to Jessica Campbell, a power skating coach that you brought in, that you're extremely fond of, that was brought in to help the team. I suggest we listen to my conversation with Jessica Campbell, and then we're gonna talk about everything that went into bringing her in and the impact that she had on your team.
Sounds good.
When opportunity presents itself, one just has to do it. I've never had the distinct honor of talking to a power skating coach. Obviously, Coach Tom Rowe made it possible. And I'm very honored, very glad that Jessica Campbell, self-proclaimed power skating coach, is now on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. And I should scratch the self-proclaimed. You are a power skating coach. And it's so unique because I've hardly ever encountered the term. First of all, Jessica, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
How is someone becoming a power skating coach?
You know, that's a very interesting question in itself, because I've actually gotten that more in Europe than I ever get that in North America. But the one thing that's, I guess, defined to me when you think about power skating is it's very a loose term, but popular term back home, of essentially teaching skating, the concept of skating instruction. And like any sport, skating is the precursor to the game of hockey. If you can't skate, you can't play. If you can't run, you can't play soccer. You know, this is the reality. And so my job is to approach skating and instruction of skating is to break it down and to understand how is the game played and what are the tools needed on the skating side to make players great hockey players. And so I think power skating has evolved since the very beginning and evolved with the game. So 10 years ago, what I was learning as a skating coach and as a player, even still playing, was skating as fast as you can up the ice in a straight line. You know, how to get as much speed, as much power skating up in a straight line. But now the way the game is played at all levels and right up to the pros. And in fact, if you watch the pros, the game of hockey is being played and skaters are now skating in a different way than they ever were, because the game is so fast. It's changed from puck possession to less physicality, still physical, but less of a physical game and more of a style where players are expected to use their puck skills to manipulate the play, is a term I use a lot. But power skating alone to me is teaching the fundamental skills that you can do with your skating to change the way the game is played and to manipulate the way the game is played to the favor of the team and your players. And so constantly my approach with power skating is looking at it as actually skills. Is skating is a skill to play the game, just like shooting and passing is. And so I guess JC Power Skating, that's my business, that's my brand. But my approach to the overall skating side of development is to create strong, fast, powerful skaters that can do it all, that can change direction, that can skate in efficient ways, you know, linear directions, laterally, the lateral directions, but ultimately being able to turn and create evasive, deceptive situations for themselves, for the team to capitalize on offensively, defensively, and ultimately with their team tactics.
Of course, I started with the most loaded questions of them all, but but just shows how big a topic this should be. And just speaking from recent Austrian experiences, hardly ever have there been skating coaches, power skating coaches that have been brought in. You told about your North American experiences where it's a lot more normal as it seems over here. Is there a gap between the appreciation of power skating coaches in North America and Europe?
You know, that's an interesting, I think we all have a different approach. One thing I know, obviously, and I can speak to it, I can't truly speak to the market so much in Europe. I guess I can address it because I got to work in Sweden as well. But my experience in North America is there's a lot of us. There's a lot of hockey. It's obviously our most popular sport in Canada alone. That's where I grew up. And so even in the US now, but there is a lot of hockey coaches. There's a lot of skating coaches, skills coaches. Now people, the way the game has changed, specialty coaches in general for lots of different sports, professional sports, but hockey specifically. The one thing that's unique with power skating or just skating coaches is we all have a different approach to how we teach it. And with me, I approach it from a skill development and I start with the game. So I have a unique way that I approach my development to players and teams with skating regards. But what I've noticed in Europe is maybe there's a disparity. I'm not too sure if that's true to say, and don't hold me to that, because I think there's a lot of great skating coaches across Europe. Some of the best and people that I've emulated is actually someone I work with every day, Swedish by background. And we have very different approaches. And that's just traditionally the market that we were raised in, and the size of the rink, it's different. North American, you know, national teams playing NHL sized ice or international Olympic sized ice. And a lot of the European rinks are Olympic sized. So you're needing to cover more ice east west. In Canada, we had smaller rinks. We had to cover more ice up the ice north south. And so we developed skaters differently. And our approaches are maybe perhaps a little bit different. But the one thing that I know and I've heard time and time again, and it's, I guess, a testament to my experience internationally as a player traveling to Europe. And if you look at Canada, US, and even just sadly, the disparity between the strength of the two countries over the international teams is strictly because of our access to resources and to skills and skating coaches and coaches in general. And that's not to say that the European market doesn't have great coaches. What I mean by that is there's more options and people doing it full time because there's a bigger hockey market for people to benefit from, to do it as a business. And I'm part of that. So it's interesting that I actually ended up here now in the DEL and having this opportunity, because I've had a ton of experience back home in North America, but now being here, this almost seems new. And it's been awesome for me because my stuff is new to these players and new to the staff, and it's new ideas, new perspective and approach to skating. So I'm just glad it's been received that way.
I want to dive into that as well, but obviously when one looks at your upbringing in hockey, Ivy League trained not only on the ice, but off of it as well. At what point did you get the feeling, I know a lot about skating, I could be good at teaching other people skating?
You know, I actually had that realization as a player. I spent 10 years with the Canadian national team. And early on as a player, you always think about giving back to the game, growing the game. And especially as female hockey players, we don't have a professional league. So we were always involved in the community. And I was from a small town, Saskatchewan. And my career started at a hockey camp with a Team Canada player at the time. And I remember going to that camp thinking, wow, this is so cool. And years later, when I had an opportunity to represent my country, I felt that I needed to give back to my community and I need to teach the young kids, girls, boys, didn't matter. I had to go home and give back, and I need to teach what I knew as a player, even if I wasn't trained or, you know. But the one thing I learned early on as a player going home in the off season and running camps for the kids and the youth was I really loved teaching skating. Skating's my skill set. Like this is always what separated me as a player. And it's something I love to do and I love to understand the technical breakdown. And I had a really good skating coach when I was in high school. One of the most renowned, played, you know, NHL skating coaches. His name is David Roy. And he inspired me in so many ways to understand and study it. And he taught me a lot about skating early on, at least the foundational movement, stride mechanics, very much how you actually physically skate. And I evolved from there and I studied and I continued to grow, but it definitely happened when I was a player. I realized, wow, this is something I'm really good at. But at no point did I say, I want to become a coach. I didn't dream of, you know, I went to the university and I got a degree in business and communications. And I thought about all of these things, but I never thought I'm going to be a coach one day and make a business of this. But I just fell into it as soon as I transitioned out of playing and I retired. And I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I actually went and worked for David Roy. And he had always been saying to me, you're the greatest skater. You were passionate about it. When are you going to come work for me and run hockey camps? And so I got this opportunity quickly and I just said, you know what? I love it. I'm good at it. And then now here I am. I never left it. I launched my own business, my own brand, and really trained myself and evolved as a now self-proclaimed skating coach or skills coach. But I think that growth is just part of the learning process, and it's a constant every day, inspiring place to be, to be in the game and to be in a game in the way that you're really passionate about. And for me, that's on the skating side and skills side.
As I've already alluded to it, we need to scratch out the self-proclaimed. If a DEL team is bringing you in, it's not a self-proclaimed coach anymore. You are a power skating and skills coach. How did that connection develop between the Nuremberg Ice Tigers, Tom Rowe, and you?
Yeah, so basically about a year ago, through a mutual hockey connection, I got in touch with the GM, Stefanie Storff, and the hockey world is very small. My actual university coach, Doug Dara, just texted me and said, I heard you're in Nuremberg. I played with Stefanie Storff in Berlin back in the day, and it's just full circle. Everybody knows everybody. But Stefan and I got talking about player development because someone had told him, you got to talk to this girl. She's got a great idea and vision and perspective. And Stefan, being Stefan, wanted to learn and grow and be challenged to learn more. And so we started chatting about potential opportunities, maybe to do stuff together with the team in the future. And that was again a year ago, and in the COVID landscape, it's kind of unique timing, but he was very taken by and intrigued by, I guess, my approach. And then I now work in Chicago full time, and I'm on a break in my season with the team that I work with. And so that presented an opportunity for me to potentially come down here and give it a shot with them and look at it. And with the nature of the way the game is going now, I think Stefan realized it would take the right coach to bring in someone like myself. And the reason that I say the right coach is because not only, yes, I specialize in skating and skills, but I'm a female. And that's just the reality is, maybe if I was, you know, not female, this wouldn't be a part of the conversation, but it is. And it's something that I definitely experience when I'm coaching on the guy's side or even with clients, but in the DEL specifically, I knew that my role as a player development coach, being a female, working with professional athletes, male and female, it would be a unique way that it would come to life. And it would take the right personality who is open-minded to know that a young female who is knowledgeable and passionate and has values to bring to a team, that personality and that person would have to be very open-minded. And that ultimately was Tom Rowe. And I didn't know, obviously I knew Tom Rowe's, you know, history in the game and his experience and qualifications is unbelievable. But I did not know that, you know, when Stefan made the connection to Tom and said, hey, do you want to bring her in? Right away, I got a message from Tom saying, let's do this, and called me and we chatted for 2 hours. And I said, this is awesome. This is exactly what I'm talking about. And within a day I was in Germany, you know, and within a day I was on the bench in Germany with Tom and the staff and meeting this team. And as much as it probably seems crazy, I think within just the 5 days that we've spent here together in Nuremberg and the meaningful role that Tom has given me with Kofi, the others, the staff, and the way that he welcomed me to the team, it's like something I would never have experienced before or ever imagined could happen. And I'm very, very grateful that Tom has the character and the leadership mentality that he does. And he's just a true class professional in so many ways. I can't speak highly enough of my experience and what he's allowed me to do here, and saw beyond my skill set as a skating coach and said, you might be good at this, but you're a coach and we need you on the bench and I need you taking over the offensive side and helping our team offensively. And I want you to help with the power play. And so in 3 days alone, I went from calling myself a skating coach to an assistant coach in the DL. And that's been so transformative for me, but it's because of people and coaches, but more so people like Tom Rowe that want to be better every single day and do not care who it is, what gender they are, or what their background may be in, but have that mindset. And here we are.
Obviously, you coming in couldn't have happened at a better point in time for the Nuremberg Ice Tigers, because obviously they're getting ready for hopefully, if you ask your fans, long playoff run, and you're preparing for them. Were you brought in and did they let you do your thing, or did you get specific tasks, specific things that you or they wanted you to work on with the guys?
They just let me do my thing, which, you know what, I think it's crazy. everybody I have told of what I've been doing here as a guest assistant coach basically is just taken aback, and myself included. I thought I was coming in to what I did today. For example, I ran an hour skill session for some of the players some of the younger guys, and some of the injured players that maybe needed just some development focus. And with the busy schedule and the playoff push, I thought I would maybe get, you know, a small amount of time to work with the players, knowing they were playing 4 games in 7 days. And it's not really the time to push the players, right? And on a personal level, it's more of the team focus and getting game ready. So I didn't know what to expect, but what happened was my conversations with Tom over the 48 hours or week before I got here, we talked so much about the game and we were picking each other's brain. And I think in those conversations, Tom realized that I'm very passionate, specifically about the offensive side of the game. And I've studied a lot of that. And I was a forward myself, but in those conversations, he said, your perspective, your ideas and your concepts, we need those. So come on in. I'm going to introduce you to the team. You're going to come on the bench. I'm going to hand over the offensive side and we need this. The team needs it. And they need a new, fresh perspective and voice. And there's nothing you're going to say that's going to hurt the team. It's only going to help the team and run with it. So he gave me a platform from 9 a.m. when I walked into the locker room, from introducing me to the guys. And shockingly, they said, let's do this. And they just embraced it, which is a testament to the culture and character that Tom has inspired with the club, Nuremberg, and that Stefan and Kofi have done with these men of really opening their minds to embrace me and the concepts and then applied them. Like our first game right away, they took the ideas and we scored 6 goals that night. And, you know, just last night they made a couple tweaks and right away scored on the only power play we got. And so we know they're hungry for this type of stuff, and to be able to support them in such a unique way, both on the development side and work with the players to getting better every day, but then watching as they work on these skills, I'm also allowing them and helping them take the plan and the skills and apply it to the game and to put it into the systems that we're trying to execute. And to see that happen and to watch them have success, for me, it's been pretty remarkable. But I think for Tom to sit back and just coach and do his job and allow me to do what I do well and to allow Kofi to do what he does well, and together as a staff to be able to support the players the best way possible, has been pretty awesome to see as they push for playoffs.
Talk about immediate impact. Couple of tweaks on the power play, boom, there goes the scoring. Obviously, on the other end of this, I'm going to talk about your experiences talk with Tom Rowe about your experiences. He's going to round out the conversation on this episode. But we agreed before doing this conversation and recording this interview that it would be a waste to just talk 15 to 20 minutes about the huge world of power skating and skating correctly and everything that goes into it. So I gotta let you leave at this point, knowing that time is such a value commodity and that there's not enough of it in your life. But you're gonna be back on Unibet Hockey O'Clock sometime this fall. And I think we just scratched the surface. And then in the fall, it's going to be a deep dive here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. For the time being, thank you so much for elaborating your work. This can be found via JC power skating. The JC stands for Jessica Campbell. You're on social media, Twitter at @Boof_Campbell can be found in the show notes of this podcast. And again, so happy that you took such extensive time to talk about power skating. A lot more coming here in the pod.
Thank you so much.
Incredible conversation that I was lucky enough to be having with Jessica Campbell, an extremely bright coach. And as regards her, and I unfortunately at the very start called her a self-proclaimed power skating coach, maybe just because of the fact that I never had the distinct honor of running into a power skating coach. And we quickly figured out that she's not self-proclaimed, that she knows all too well what she's doing and what she's just trying to do with the team. What has she done? How has she transformed the Nuremberg Ice Tigers?
Well, Stefan Ustorf is the one who deserves the credit, because he had come to me, and Stefan and I had been talking about trying to hire another coach / skills coach. Because we want to develop our young guys, but not only the young guys, the veteran guys can learn a lot of new things and better way of doing it. So he came in one day and he said, listen, he said, my dad knows this woman by the name of Jessica Campbell. And, he's been really encouraging me to, bring her into Nuremberg and see what she's all about. And he said, are you okay with that? I said, yeah, absolutely. I said, I'd love to hear her ideas. And I said to him, I said, Usti, I said, I don't care if it's a man or a woman. I said, I just want the best person. And it really didn't matter. So I said, but, if you have her phone number, why don't you give it to me? So he gave me the phone number. I gave her a call. I was on the phone with her, oh my God, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes. And I had just met her. And I said, why don't you explain to me what you're all about, what you do? So, she talked to me about the power skating and the skills. And she said, but it's all game situations. She says, I'm not a skating coach that's just going to put the guys on the ice and just skate straight lines up and down the ice and do edges and things like that. I said, okay, great. I said, so everything you do is what they're going to be able to use in the game. She said, yeah, that's all it is. And she said, I have a different way of doing it. She said that skating was my strength. And, she said, I've just kind of formed a lot of ideas that I think help. And then she said, obviously working with a lot of NHL players and talking with a lot of other skills coaches and a couple that she worked with, she learned from, and then she's applied it a lot differently. So I said, okay, great. I said, well, listen, I said, maybe we can get you in here for training camp next year and, get a look at what you do. She said, well, matter of fact, I'm actually flying to Germany tomorrow. I said, you are. I said, okay. So she said, yeah, I'm only going to be about 3 hours away. I'm going to be in Schwedingen visiting family and friends. And she's like, I can definitely pop down. As a matter of fact, I can bring my skates with me if you want. And I said, well, absolutely bring your skates. So to fast forward a little bit, she came into town. We got talking about, power play and offense. And I said, I asked her, I said, well, what's your strength? Because I said, my strength is more on the defensive side. I said, I love offense, but I usually spend more time on defense. She said, well, I feel my strength is more on the offensive side. I said, well, great. I said, why don't you grab a marker and get up on the board here and show us your offensive schemes and ideas. And me and Kofi's his nickname, Manuel Kofler, she blew us away. I mean, she got up there, not intimidated one little bit. She has this term of winning the rivers, which I call, lines. So I said, okay. I said, that's interesting. That's a good way to put it. And then she said, we got to win the zone. And then she has the terminology of using pockets and triangles. And Kofi and I just always talked about triangles in the offensive zone. You got to always have an out and preferably in the slot area. If you can work the puck and make sure the play is inside the dots. But her ideas were refreshing. They were new. The way she presented was outstanding. She was very calm, very confident, and just had a great way about her. And I'm saying, man, oh man, I said, this is pretty exciting. And I took it another step further. I said, listen, I said, why don't you before you get on the plane, why don't you take a look at our power play? Because I said, I haven't been able to get it going whatsoever. And I said, you know, take a look at that. So when you get here, we can talk about it. And I said, I think, you know, we move too slow. We don't move the puck fast enough. And so I said, that would be my critique of our power play. So she took a look at it. She got here and she said, I'd only make one suggestion to you, or one of the suggestions she would make. She had a few. She said, I think your bumper needs to get a lot more active and support the puck a lot better. And I said, you're absolutely right. So we got talking about that. And then we had another meeting, just me, her, and Kofi. And I said, you know what? I said, Jessica, you're going to present power play and you're going to present your offensive zone ideas to the guys. Because I said, you know, we have not spent anywhere near enough time on the offense. And she went in there and presented the video, and the guys were blown away. They were, you could see the energy go sky high. And that's what she's done. She's come in and she's come in with a few new ideas, definitely new concepts on how to attack the offensive zone. And I just got out of the way. I just said, you know, I want to make this experience. I'm talking to myself now. I'm saying, I want to make this experience real positive for her. And I don't want her to be uncomfortable in a room with, you know, 30 hockey players. Right. And, you know, I don't think it could have gone any better. Our players loved it. Patrick Reimer came up to me, I don't know, maybe a day or two after she had been here. And he said, hey, Tom, he said, are we bringing her back full time? I said, I sure hope so. I said, because I really like what I see. Plus all the work she did on the ice with the guys on the power skating, within the game situations, teaching them different ways to cut back. We were phenomenal. And then I took a step further after that. I just said, you know what, Jessica? I said, we got a game tomorrow night. And I said, I want you on the bench. Because I asked her, I said, for you to evaluate our players, I says, can you do it? Is it better to you for you to do it from the stands? Or do you think being on the bench would be better? And she said, either way, she said, you know, I can definitely do it on the bench. I'll see the same stuff. And I said, okay. I said, well, listen, I said, you're going to be involved in our power play. I said, you got a real great idea on how to run an offensive zone scheme. I said, come on the bench. And I said, I don't want you to be shy. I said, give the guys 20 seconds to catch their breath when they come off a shift. And I said, if you see something, you know, that they didn't do or they could do better, I said, you know, don't be afraid to talk to them. So that's what we did. We got her involved right away. I never thought in a million years that the chemistry would click as fast as it did. And the more I talked with her, the more I really enjoyed her perspective on the game. And I do think our sport needs fresh ideas, new ideas regarding of gender. And I think having a woman's perspective is always a great thing, you know, because they look at colors differently. They're a lot more creative than guys are. And I said, man, oh man, I said, this could really, really work. And it could really help us get to the next level, but get to the next level quicker. Because in today's game, there's so much to do. There's so much of the communication with the players to do. And that's what I said to her and Kofi one day after practice. I said, this allows me to get out in the locker room, touch the players more, talk to the players more. So if there's an issue, you know, I can address it immediately. So we don't have a kid going home, having sleepless nights for a week or two. And that allows me to go and do a lot of other things. And it really allows me and Kofi to work really close together on our defensive schemes, our penalty killing, and with the defensemen. Because if we can bring Jessica back, I'm not sure where that stands at this particular moment. I know her and Stefan Ustorff are having a conversation today. If we can bring her back full time, then it just makes us that much stronger of a staff. It makes me a better coach because she's got some good ideas. I think my experiences that I've gone through will make her a better coach and make Kofi a better coach. So it's really a good team effort, and we're really feeding off of each other. And I've always felt that you've got to get along off the ice as well as you do on the ice to be successful. And her knowledge of the game and her presentation skills are absolutely terrific. And she's very comfortable standing up in front of everybody, giving a video presentation. It doesn't hurt that she went to Cornell University and had a 3.8 grade point average. So she's got the whole package. And I think, you know, I know for a fact that she's going to do some great things in this game. And she's only 29 years old. She's very, very young. But I'm very, very excited about the potential of working with her full time. And she'll be I told her, stop calling yourself a power skating instructor and skills coach, because if we bring you in here, you're going to be a full blown assistant coach and you'll be involved in everything with us.
I do understand what you're saying after having had the chance and the honor to be talking to her. Now, with everything that you just said, she's probably becoming an even more valuable commodity to a lot of people in the hockey business, which is good for her, which probably hurts the Ice Tigers' efforts to bring her back in. But as we're talking about the very different things that she did, and you were alluding to the power play that she managed, the first day or the first game she did it, your power play clicked and you scored against, quote unquote, one of the best teams in the DL, against Munich. But from the drills that she did, from the things that she tried to do with your team, what was maybe the first thing that raised an eyebrow?
The first thing that raised an eyebrow, got my attention real quick, was just how she felt that we should be moving our bumper around a little more in the 1-3-1 formation that we use. Now, I'm telling you this on your podcast. I know anybody listening to your podcast from other teams will know our plan, but you know, I think it's important that you know this. She said your bumper is too stagnant in the middle of the in the 1-3-1, and so she said we just need to get them more active and support the puck better. That made a huge difference. And then we got more motion in the power play, and we got guys moving around into different areas. So you know, and on a real aggressive penalty kill team, you got to be able to move the puck fast, and you got to have good, strong puck support. And then on a passive, you know, penalty killing unit, you know, that bumper can really get over and support the puck and kick it back to the half wall, and the half wall can either go up high or down low to it. And that was what she said. So this is where I think you guys, you know, can do things a little better. I said, awesome. I said, that's what we're looking for. And then she presented to the guys on video. And ever since she's gone over it with video, our power play looks like it's, you know, could be a top five power play if it was being run like this all year long. So that's where I think as a coach, you really got to take a step back and you got to let your staff, you know, run with a new idea. And like I always say, you know, it may work or it may not work, but the worst thing that could happen is the other team scores a goal against us and we go back, line up, and start over again. But you need to have fresh ideas. You need to think outside the box. And, you know, you can't be afraid to let other people on your staff do the work. And that's what she did. You know, Manuel Kofler does an unbelievable job with our penalty killing. Our penalty killing has been top 2-3 most of the year, slid a little bit lately. But he's the same way. He's got a million different ideas, you know, very simple way. It's a very simple way to attack other teams' power plays. And, you know, when him and I first got together, he said, hey, is it okay if I do this? Is it okay if I do that on the penalty? I said, hey, Manny, I said, stop asking for permission. Just do it. And I think that's, as a head coach, that's what I bring to the table, is I allow the people I'm working with to try new things. And if I give somebody responsibility on penalty killing or power play, it's their baby. And I want them to do everything they can to make it the best. So I don't know, the chemistry between the three of us in very short order was phenomenal. And her ideas on the offensive side of the game, I really like. It's very modern to the way the game's being played today. And it's been good for me too, because it's kind of gotten me out of looking at the game the same old way. You know, now I'm looking at things a lot differently and more creatively, for sure. And, you know, defense is defense. You know, it's hard work and you got to be disciplined in the D zone. So there's nothing real fancy that you can do there. But when you have the puck, you know, let's get, let's get going. And I've always encouraged a guy to push the pace, make plays, don't dump and chase, be a possession puck team. But Jessica will be able to handle that whole section of our systems, and I think we'll be a much better club because of it.
Now that you've already mentioned him a couple of times, Manuel Kofler, he's your assistant coach. And in preparation of this talk, I talked to a couple of people who know the DEL inside out and kind of have a keen eye for the next up-and-coming talents. Doesn't matter if it's players or coaches. And one of them, one of the guys that I talked to, he said, watch out for Manuel Kofler. He could be doing real good things in the next couple of years. How much of a head coaching material are we already talking about?
With Manny? I think I've told him that from the get-go. You know, when I got here, he said, I need more experience. He said, I want to be a head coach, but I'm not ready to be one right now. And I said, okay. I said, well, let's work together. And, as we go here, if I see some things you can do a little better, we'll talk about it. In video presentation, he was showing me a little too much respect because he didn't want to go outside the box on his video presentations. And I finally said to him, I said, hey, Manny, I said, you've got a great grasp on the game. I said, you got a wonderful mind for the game. You got a lot of good ideas. I said, don't be changing your presentation in the video room just because I'm standing there. I said, you got to just get up there with conviction and tell the guys what you think. So we went through a couple of weeks of him being a little too tentative. And ever since then, he's really taken charge and he's done a great job on presenting his video and the way he wants to do things. But he's here's what he's really good at. Outside the hockey knowledge that he has, because that's real strong. He's got a phenomenal way with the guys on the team. He's just a good person and he's definitely a modern day coach because he builds relationships. He's got very, very tight relationships with all the guys here. And that's where his success is going to come from. On top of him knowing the game inside and out and understanding the way the game's to be played today, he's very, very driven by building relationships and he really cares about these guys. And he's the one that's really helped me figure out, especially the German players, he's really helped me figure out their personalities and how they tick and, who you can push and who you got to put an arm around, who you need to kick in the pants to get them going. So he's got a bright future and I don't think he'll stay an assistant coach much longer. I mean, if teams are smart in the DEL and even in the Austrian League, I mean, this is a guy that could take over a team right now and do a real good job of it.
Now, as we're recording this conversation, it's still Monday. Tomorrow is the day that's going to count for the first playoff round, which is in Austria called the pre-playoffs before it gets to the final eight. There are a couple of things that we have to talk about before we get to your bout with DEG. It's been a newsworthy day for the Ice Tigers because a couple of extensions got out. Obviously, not more important than the one with the living legend, Patrick Reimer, who's going to add another year to his storied career. How does it feel to know he's going to be there next year? And how does it feel to coach a living legend?
Yeah, it's pretty special. He was a big reason I wanted to stay here because him and I have grown real close in a short period of time. He's a great captain. And just the way, he's going to be 39 or he is 39 in the way he plays the game. When he got hurt there for a little while, but up until he got hurt, he was our best player. I mean, both offense and defense, he was unbelievable. But just the way he handles himself off the ice is what impresses me the most. He obviously is a great hockey player. There's no doubt about that. And we don't even need to discuss that. But his quiet leadership in the locker room, he really handles himself very, very, very professionally. And he's not afraid to come in and talk to me about different things within the team, and I lean on him all the time. Him and I, you know, we've had so many in-depth conversations on how to build this team moving forward and how to achieve the successes that we all think we can, you know, in the next couple of years. But no, he's just he's a great resource for me because he knows the DEL inside and out, and he's also he can push guys when they need to be pushed, and everybody in the room respects the heck out of him. So when he gets up to say something in the locker room, everybody's listening. But no, he's a huge piece of what we're doing here.
And to all the people, especially listening from Austria or other countries, he's the all-time leading scorer in German hockey. So there's that. He's been a Nuremberg icon, a captain for a very long time, and obviously another one of the cornerstones that you're trying to build around. But what does it say? And this went out not too long ago. What does it say about the program that veterans like Ryan Stoa, who's got a 2-year extension as well, wanna be with the club, wanna be in the future of the club?
Yeah, well, he's a big time leader for us on the ice. First guy on the ice, or one of the first guys on the ice every day at practice. So, you know, his leadership qualities, why we really wanted to sign him more than 1 year. And, you know, you got to have certain guys in your lineup to win championships, to anchor, you know, your core group. And that's why he was so important to the franchise, to make sure he was signed up for at least one more year, and it worked out in a good way that he signed on for 2 more years. But, you know, those are the guys that help you get through the tough days and the losing streaks, and, you know, and every team goes through them, right? But leadership and character are what we put first, and then we look at the skill, and then we go from there. So he is another one that I have a lot of conversations with, you know, and there's a lot of guys. Like Chris Brown is another outstanding guy, has given us an awful lot of good hockey, but also a lot of really good leadership. You know, we got Blake Parlett here, Andrew Bodnichuk. I got a guy by the name of Oli Mibis, who's absolutely terrific. You know, he's another big time leader for us in the room. So that's why we've been able to turn this thing around, is more of the group in the room. And the veterans we've got, they're the ones that guide the young kids and teach the young kids how to navigate the rough waters when you hit them.
Now, as we turn our attentions to the playoffs, and Nuremberg has been on a pretty good run. The last time you lost in regulation to a team was against the leader of the clubhouse and the league, the Eisbären Berlin. And as the statisticians and the stats that the Unibet statisticians provide to this podcast go, Berlin's also the favorite to win the championship with odds of 1 to 3.75. Then it's Munich with 1 to 4 and Wolfsburg with 1 to 5. Obviously, these stats come in on the day where we would have initially had our conversation, which I think was Wednesday a week ago. Now it's Monday. These could have changed a little bit, but all these teams are playoff bound. All these teams are great. Just having watched the league for a couple of months now, having had your last regulation loss against Berlin, haven't had a tight game against Munich, are those two, according to the Unibet stats, the teams to beat?
Yeah, they are. For sure they are. Berlin, they've got a lot of depth. They got 4 lines that they can roll at you all night long. Munich's the same way. They got a lot of skill. Yeah, but no, you definitely would have to say they're the odds-on favorite, one of them, to win the whole league. But at the end of the day, that's on paper, and you got to go out and execute. And you know, you still got to get it done on the ice. But no, they're terrific teams. And right now, I'd have to say Red Bull's the hottest team in the league. I mean, they're putting up a lot of goals. I think they've had a couple of shutouts the last couple of weeks, and you know, they're playing really good. So it's a great league with a lot of great players in it. And but yeah, you know, you got Mannheim too. Can't forget them, even though they've had an up and down year. They're still a very, very good hockey club, and they just named Bill Stewart their interim head coach. So he's got a lot of experience. He's won a championship before. So, you know, I think, like I've said before, you just got to get in. And once you get in, you get a hot goaltender, anything can happen.
By the way, that's what you two, or that's what ties you two together, you and Bill Stewart, both former Linz coaches, still a very well-known guy in Linz now. Now he's coaching the Mannheim Eagles, the Adler. But before I want to talk to you about the playoffs, this is a little reminder that Unibet has a special offer for all new customers. It's a 400% welcome bonus. Just use the promo code HOCKEY-BONUS while putting 10 euros into your new account for the first time and receive 40 euros completely for free. That's right, for free. More details in the show notes of this podcast. It's Unibet, by players, for players. And coach, as we're approaching the first round of the playoffs, it's now been set in stone that you're going to face Düsseldorf, and it's going to be a best of three series. Normally in hockey, we're used to best of seven. Luckily enough, over here in Austria, even though COVID's hit teams, we've been lucky enough to experience best of seven series throughout the playoffs, and we're starting the finals tomorrow as well, so knock on wood, and this is my head. But it's going to be best of five from the quarters onwards in Germany and best of three in the playoffs or in the first round of the playoffs. How differently are you and your team going to approach a best of three series than a best of five series? Is there even a difference?
Yeah, no difference whatsoever. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. You know, like I said, we're playing a stronger puck possession game, making a lot more plays, especially since Jessica's been here. We put a couple of new things in place, which has helped our offense tremendously, and obviously the power play. So, we're going to keep moving in that direction. We've preached defense first, offense second. You know, when we don't have the puck, we've got to shut it down and get it back as quickly as possible. So we've been doing that all year long. And we're not going to change our forecheck. You know, we'll make some adjustments as the series goes on if we need to. But I really want, you know, we'll take a deeper dive into Düsseldorf tomorrow than we normally would during the regular season. And then after that first deep dive, you know, we're going to worry more about ourselves than we do Düsseldorf, because we want to be the initiator. We want to be aggressive. We want to be puck pursued, you know, put a lot of pressure on them. And they play very similar to us. There's a lot of respect back and forth to each other's club. You know, I've become really good friends with Harry Kreiss in a very short period of time. And when I spent, you know, a lot of time on the phone talking and, you know, just talking hockey in general. So I it's going to be a very hard fought series. I think it's going to be probably up and down, fast, physical at the right moments. But I respect Harry as a coach tremendously, and his players, the way they play. And, you know, I think the feeling's very similar coming back from them. So it'll be a great, great series for the Nuremberg fans to watch and Düsseldorf, and should be a lot of fun when we kick it off tomorrow night.
Most definitely. And obviously, all the games in Germany can be watched via Magenta, available hopefully to fans outside of Germany as well. But this is the place to watch all German hockey. Exciting series coming up. The one last question I need to ask you as a former, well, not former, hopefully still ongoing NHL pundit on this show, but I know you've got a lot of things to do and a lot of things on your mind. So there's only this one quick question regarding the National Hockey League. Which team has brought the most joy to you this year watching in the National Hockey League?
Oh, that's an easy one. My old club, Florida Panthers. Yeah, they, even though I got fired from there, I've watched their games a lot. And, you know, I think Bill Zito's done a great job, you know, rebuilding that team. He changed the roster quite a bit, brought a lot more grit in, a lot of good character guys, but he didn't lose the offense that the team was built around. And man, oh man, they're a fun team to watch. You know, guys like Mackenzie Weegar, and him and I had our battles in the minors when he was a rookie. You know, the fact that he's become such a tremendous, tremendous defenseman, you know, with the help of, you know, coaches that he had along the way. Scotty Allen worked with him in the minors, who was the head coach for Washington's farm team, Jordy Kinnear. I think Jordy Kinnear probably had the biggest impact on his career at the minor league level. Jordy's still with Florida, coaching the farm team there. So to watch a guy like him, and knowing what I knew about him when I had him and where he was at that particular point in his career, and see how he's evolved over the years is a lot of fun to watch. But no, I, honest to God, and you know, and maybe maybe the players there don't believe it, but I really love watching them play hockey. It is so entertaining, and that's the way I think the game should be played. You know, the way Tampa Bay plays, the way Carolina plays. You know, Las Vegas does a great job. Matter of fact, I bring our defensemen in the video room here, and we watch an awful lot of the Florida offensive zone clips and how they attack the zone. So, yeah, I'm definitely partial to Florida and Carolina because I have a lot of very good friends in Carolina still. And like I said, even though things didn't end well in Florida, I still root for them. I think they're doing a great job.
That's a hockey business, and it can't be a coincidence that you're on this podcast, coming off of doing commentary on the Florida New Jersey game, where they just got back from a 4-goal deficit in the third. Anyhow, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks so much for bringing forward Jessica Campbell, letting a lot of people know about her and what she's bringing to the table. All the best for the upcoming playoffs first round. Hope you get into the final eight, and looking forward to having another hockey conversation, maybe about the NHL, maybe about life, maybe about something entirely different somewhere down the road.
Yeah, you know, and just before we sign off here, I do want to congratulate Matt McIlvain and his coaching staff for getting to the finals. I also want to congratulate Brian Lebler, my former captain in Lens, and I'm absolutely thrilled that he's going to get a chance to win another championship. And it hasn't been announced yet, but we signed Daniel Leonhardt, a very young and up-and-coming player from Salzburg. He'll be with us in Nuremberg next year. So congratulations to all those guys, and I'll be watching and rooting for them.
Great stuff, Coach. As always, much appreciated. All the best to you and your guys.
Thanks, Martin.
Unibet. Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet. Hockey. O'Clock.